to bus Iha in this life, by indeed, Savarnam of the same caste, Maryam his wife, Vijaha a person of a higher caste, such as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya. Vaitaha, the salmon. Payayate, causes to drink. Kamamohitaha, being deluded by lusty desire. Kam, him. Papakritam, performing sin. Amutra, in the next life. Vetakulyayam, in a river of semen. Patayipo, throwing. Vetaha, semen. Sampayayanti, forced to drink. So translation. If a foolish member of the twice-born classes, Brahman and Kshatriya, and Vaishya forces his wife to drink his semen out of a lusty desire to keep her under control, he is put after death into the hell known as Lala Moksha. There he is thrown into a flowing river of semen which he is forced to drink. So purport, by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The practice of forcing one's wife to drink one's own semen is a black art practiced by extremely lusty persons. Those who practice this very abominable activity say that if a wife is forced to drink her husband's semen, she remains very faithful to him. Generally, only low-class men engage in this black art. But if a man born in a higher class does so, after death he is put into the hell known as Lala Moksha. There he is immersed in a river known as Shukra Nadi and forced to drink semen. So it's a little scatological. So Om Ganatya Vidanda Shah Gananjana Shilakya Chakshu Miritan Yena Tismai Shigurave Namaha. So I'm not going to specifically talk about the details here, obviously. But I'm going to talk about category of what's being talked about here, which is called Tantra, left-handed Tantra. Actually, the word in Sanskrit doesn't mean anything negative, the word Tantra at least. Tantra means to connect. Like we also have in our Vaishnava literatures, Tantras, like the Narada Pancharatra and the rules on deity worship, like you have the this whole red book on deity worship, which some of you may have seen, Pancha Pradipa, which is so complicated that I can't even figure it out. I remember when they first came out with it, I said, well, if I have to follow that, I'm just going to stay off the altar. So what we do here in Nugaloka is we keep things simple. We have the kiss philosophy. Not that we go around kissing each other, but keep it simple, sadhu. The non-devotees say keep it simple, stupid. But we don't want to call any devotees stupid, so we call them sadhus. So if we want to preach in the Western world, I mean, it's one thing in India, if you're preaching to, let's say, ritualistic brahmanas, then you got to keep it very complex, sadhu. K-I-C-S. Keep it complex, sadhu. Because they won't respect. Just like when Srila Prabhupada installed the deities in Krishna Balaram Mandir, Prabhupada had all these different ritualistic brahmanas come from all over Braj, and they did all their mudras. You can see where my mind is at. Anyway, they did all their all the mudras and this and that. And, you know, touch their ear in the right place. There's all these things. It's actually interesting. How in India there's so many of these little rituals. Like if if someone chastises you and you take it to a mea culpa, you know, I'm wrong, you know, please forgive me, you have to touch both your earlobes. You've seen this before? You go like that, that means, anyway, it means I'm sorry, I'm a jerk. Did you know that? I'm a jerk, you know, if you touch. You gotta be careful, you know. And if you nod, that means no. And if you go like that, it means yes. So there's all these different little things you gotta learn. Whenever you yawn, you gotta snap your fingers or else the demons come and inhabit your body. You think you want food? No. When I first saw that, I thought someone was hungry and I offered them some food. See, you learn all these different little tricks when you go to India. You know, and even I picked up on them, you know, even in America I find myself, someone says something and I agree with him, I go, like that. And then everyone thinks I have Parkinson's disease. No, it's just so I've been Indian-fied. So, anyway, getting back to the point. So when Prabhupada installed the deities in Krishna Mala Mandira, he called for all these ritualistic Brahmins. They did all this fancy stuff. It went on for a long time. And the devotees also did something very simple. It's called chanting Hare Krishna. And Prabhupada said, actually, the deities were installed because of the kirtan. But he had to do all this fancy stuff so that people would respect. I mean, sometimes you have to dress up a little bit so people would respect. Like sannyasis, sometimes even though they're not supposed to wear sewn clothing, it'd be kind of hard here in North Carolina to walk around in your gumsho all the time without socks. Can you imagine that? You know, I see, like, some of our sannyasis actually just sort of like that. They'll, even when they go to the Western world, they'll wear these wooden shoes, right? You see that? The wooden shoe. What are you doing? And they said, well, it's to control lust. Because it's something to do with the little wooden knob in the middle that fits between, you see this? It fits between your toe, you know, your big toe and the next toe. I don't know what the next toe is called, your pointy toe. But no, there's a pointy finger, but there's I don't know the names of all the toes. So you put this in between the toes and it's keep you from being lusty. And even a sannyasi's cape is supposed to protect you from the women. Not much protection. I guess it's like a bull out of the bullfighter's cape, you know, you just wave in front of the women, they come charging or something. Like that. So you have all these anyway, so that's why Prabhupada did it, so that people would respect. And so in the same way, you see many of our acharyas follow the same process of adapting things according to time, place, and circumstance. So that's why many of the different rituals in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, Prabhupada said they were influenced by Smarta Brahman conceptions. What that means is that not that the Goswamis were influenced by Smarta Brahman conceptions. Smarta Brahman means like ritualistic Brahman. So it's that in order to present Krishna consciousness in such a way that it be respected, you have to add all these different like rituals. And then that's necessary in India to have all these rituals. Because otherwise people will think, you know, you're just a bunch of Western malachas. Let you do all these little fancy things. So therefore the Goswamis put that in the Hari Bhakti Vilas and other literatures like that. And so in ISKCON we've amalgamated some of these different details in our literatures, and that may be useful for preaching in India because people should respect us. But in America, it may not be so useful for various reasons. One reason is that people become very confused when they walk into the Hare Krishna temple. Like we were mentioning yesterday, that when you want to change someone's mentality or change someone's lifestyle, you have to do it in little baby steps. So if someone walks in the temple and something is so strange and people are waving their hands, pulling their earlobes. You know, it's just like, as I mentioned, it's like that, that movie Temple of Doom. People walking, wow. And it's interesting to people, but not the people who want to join. You know, a lot of things are interesting. I mean, I can walk into the zoo, and the zoo will be interesting to me, but I'm not joining. It's, you know, it's very interesting. I'll go in and take pictures and show them my slideshow. This is a tiger, this is a lion. There's a man sticking his head in the lion's mouth. But I'm not going to stick my head in some lion's mouth. So, we have to really consider, like Prabhupada said, rules that may be applicable in the Western world or in India may not be applicable in the Western world. I mean, so things have to be adjusted. And we have to understand the essentials, the siddhanta. Siddhanta means perfect conclusion. In other words, things that are inseparable from Krishna consciousness, things that are absolute, can never be changed. Siddhanta can never be changed. It's not that in the Western world we're going to say, for example, that the soul is not eternal, just to satisfy some Christians, you know. Or to say that the bones will rise again. You know, some people think in different religions that at the time of the Day of Judgment, all the bones will come out of your grave. I don't even want to be around for that. It'd be so frightening, isn't it? Bones will come out. Just like I mentioned about a few months ago, I mentioned about one of my disciples who happened to be in a Muslim country. And where they have a similar belief that you have to have all your bones intact to be able to go back to Godhead. And what happened is that she got sick in a Muslim country. And she got appendicitis. And so she had to go to the hospital. And she went to the hospital, had the appendix operation, and they took the appendix out. I mean, she didn't understand a word that they were saying because it was some foreign language like Arabic or something. And the doctor, you know, it was frightening for her. Can you imagine, like, being wheeled into the hospital, not knowing what's happening, nobody's able to explain it to you because nobody speaks your language, and they put you out under, and you don't know if you're coming out again. And anyway, so they were very nice. They took her appendix out, and then after the operation, of course they sewed her up too. After the operation, they gave her a bag with the appendix. I said, what are you giving me this back for? She said, well, when you die, you have to be buried with this too. Because you don't want to go back to Godhead without your appendix. Pretty good. So,
what is so stupid?
I don't know, keep it in the refrigerator. Freeze dry it, I don't know. I don't really know what they intended. But you have to have the whole body intact. So that's against our philosophy. Obviously, you know, if we're preaching in the Muslim world, we're not going to start preaching, you know, about you have to keep your body intact. You are your body. I mean, these are siddhantic things that don't get changed. Or Krishna is a supreme personality in Godhead. He plays a flute. It's not that, you know, we're preaching in America that Krishna plays the bass guitar. You know, we change all the pictures. You know, like out of that Govinda picture on the wall there. And you put a guitar. You put a guitar in Krishna's hands. And you put Radharani in the blue jeans. No, that's, you know, obviously, these things you don't change. Or, of course, they tried that in the temple in Vrindavan, they gave Krishna a cell phone. Like the Monkey Bihari temple. Because they're trying to market Monkey Bihari for everyone. It's like the most popular temple, even, in one sense, it's even more popular than our temple, because the people come there, they have these lightning darshans, they started this whole story, the deities ran. They can only have lightning darshans or the deities will actually follow you out of this door. I mean, that's good marketing. There's no proof it actually happened, but they make up these stories. And if you make up a story, then, you know, people in India, people just believe it, right? And they go, wow. You know, if I just tell you I went to the Radhakalavananda's temple and I became a billionaire after I offered $5 to the deities, you know, we'd have the temple full.
Yeah.
Of people. Maybe we should do that. That's a good idea. Now that I think about it. Yeah, actually, that's, I'm thinking of how to raise money for our new temple. And I just realized how to do it. So, so getting back to the point, there's all these rituals in the different temples. So in the West, we have to stick with the Siddhanta. And the Siddhanta, you know, basic items of the Siddhanta are unite your body, eternal servants of Krishna. There's different rasas that one has with Krishna. Rasa means a taste, not relationship. One can be a friend of God, a lover of God, a parent of God, or just a servant or passive adorer of God. So we stick with that stuff. But the external things can change. And we can keep it very simple for Western people. I mean, like I was, like I mentioned, I was born in the West, obviously. Everybody knows that. It's not hard to figure that out. And, you know, I like deity worship very simple, you know, because if it gets more complex, even if I start counting circles around a big circle, I'll forget what I'm doing. Isn't it? You know, they say you have to do so many circles for this item, for the incense, so many circles, for the light, so many circles, for the water, another for your circles. And I just like, huh? It's actually above my pay grade. It's too much. Too much, you know. I just, anyway, for me it's too much. I was not born in a ritualistic Brahmin family or even a ritualistic Jewish family. Because actually, it's interesting, in each and every religion they do have these ritualistic people. In the Jewish religion, there's all these little rituals. I remember they did mudras and everything in the temple. And they have all these things, the Simchas Torah. I'm not going to go through the whole Jewish religion now, but it's interesting. But I just like things simple. You know, God, love God, chant his name, dance in ecstasy, read about what he does in the spiritual world. That's about all I can accommodate. So tantras, getting back to the point. So tantras can actually be adjusted according to time, place, and certain Vaishnava tantras. Because the word just means what connects you. The connection. So what connects one person may not be appropriate for another person. It may be too much for them or too little for them. Someone may actually need the mudras just to connect themselves. Because that's their nature. There's different natures. Even within the Brahminical nature, there's different Brahmanas. There's Brahmins who like to study. There's Brahmins who like rituals. There's Brahmins who like to execute austerities. There's Brahmins who like to do all these yoga postures. Anyway, there's all these different Brahmanas. And there's Brahmanas who like to eat. Brahma Bhojana. Right? We're going to eat for Krishna. And there's Brahmanas who like to collect donations for Krishna. Anyway, so there's different natures. And so Krishna consciousness really has to be presented not only according to a particular culture, but we have to present it according to someone's psychophysical nature so they feel comfortable in becoming a devotee of Krishna. That's preaching Krishna consciousness. So that's Vaishnava tantras. Now what's being mentioned here in this verse is what's called left-handed tantras, which is probably more interesting than Vaishnava tantras. And just like we have our regulated principles, which we are not going to change for Krishna West, we're not going to, Krishna West is not going to be, you know, as soon as marijuana becomes legal, we'll have it as one of our sacraments. We're not going to become Rastafarians. Yeah, come into the Krishna West, stay high. We have some nice hemp incense for you. So, anyways, so as far as this left-handed tantra, they have regulated principles, just like we have regulated principles. And they have more regulated principles than us. They have 5 regulated principles. We only have 4. So they're doing better than us. So their regulated principles are called the 5 M's, one of which is mentioned here, actually. The one that's mentioned here is called Maitunya. Maitunya means in Sanskrit sex life. But the Maitunya for the left-handed tantric people is like kinky, you know, lack of a better word, kinky or like, just like abominable sex life. In the Vaishnava tantra, of course, you have sex life for procreation. This is one of the big discussions now, like whether we want people who are of different inclinations to be Krishna conscious. Of course, we want everyone to be Krishna conscious. But we really just define sex life in terms of that. It's for procreation. Procreation means children. And actually, I was just reading the book about how religions, or which religions survive. And those religions survive that have the highest rate of procreation. It's interesting. I'm not just encouraging you all to procreate. But it's just a fact that's been studied in the universities. You know, those who take care of their children and have a very high rate of procreation. I mean, like you see the Muslims, very high rate of procreation. The Mormons have a very high rate. Catholics have a very high, at least they used to, a very high rate of procreation. So that's the purpose of sex. But in the left-handed tantric people, they have other purposes for it. And it even gets down to bestiality, which I'm not going to mention what that is. It's just abominable. So that's one of the regulator principles. They have to do it. It's not just like optional. You have to do it in left-handed tantra. And so that, let's see if I remember all the other M's. Another M is matcha. Matcha, of course, means fish. So you have to eat fish in left-handed tantra. Why do you have to eat fish? Because there's so much in the mode of goodness to eat. No, I'm just speaking facetiously. Because it's such an abominable thing to eat. I mean, if anyone's walked into a fish market, I mean, in India, of course, they have these open fish markets. And it smells so bad that it's incredible. I mean, the mode of ignorance is so much pervading the atmosphere of the fish market. In Fiji, of course, there's so many open fish markets. And so one has to eat fish. And then another regulated principle, for those of you who want to practice, we can have Tantra West too. Right next to, you know, we can have, no, but we have to have ourselves, we have to do it. I mean, we have to, right next to our center, we should put another center, you know, so options. People should have options, you know, why not? So, you know, Krishna West and Tamak West. You know, Tamak means the mode of ignorance West. So another one is mada. Mada means intoxication. So you have to take intoxication. Just like, you know, in India, of course, that's very prominent. I mean, marijuana grows everywhere in India. It's just wild. You don't have to buy it. And I mentioned how I've gone to different temples and that I've been offered hashish, not even marijuana, you know, hashish. And I just have to be very respectful and say, not today, because it's a codicil. I make some excuse. I have to make some excuse so they don't get offended, you know, because they're taking intoxication. Of course, marijuana, they probably won't get angry. But this is a peace and love. You know, I somehow or other, I feel like I'm back in the 1960s when I go to these at a rainbow festival. So, you've seen that in India, haven't you? Of course. And so that's another regulated principle. You gotta have to take intoxication just to be a bona fide a bona fide left-handed tantric. And then, so the other one is, of course, mudra. That's something we learned in the 1960s, too. Mudra means obscene gestures. Like, you know, giving someone the finger or something like that. It's just like obscene gestures. You know, sticking your tongue out. Just like offending people. You really have to offend people if you're going to be a bona fide tantric. And I remember one of our devotees, before he became a devotee, was doing a tour around India. And he met this tantric. He thought the tantric was just a spiritualist. And the tantric sent him out to get some ingredients for a ceremony or sacrifice. And he didn't realize that he was going to be one of the ingredients for the sacrifice. So, unfortunately, he was tipped off because he went to someone and he said, you know, I'm looking for this ingredient for my Guru Dev. And the person said, you're one of the ingredients. You better get the hell out of there before you, because every one of his disciples has disappeared. And you find this. And also, that's why, especially in India, you have to be very careful where you buy your food, because sometimes they put these tantric curses even on sweet balls. There was one devotee, and in Mayapur, of course, they didn't go very much into tantra. And one devotee who bought a sweet ball on the market, it looked really good, and then he just felt something growing in his stomach. And it was actually a whole like tree or something growing in his stomach, you know, he was cursed. And they had to perform like reverse tantra or whatever, just to get the thing out. I mean, there's a black art. I mean, in the West, of course, we have our voodoo. When I was in South America, I saw this all the time. Not all the time, you know, many times. Not all the time. All the time is just like an absolute word. Many times, you know, I saw brahmacharis run away with brahmacharinis because they made voodoo dolls for them. You know, just, don't try that. And then I saw people having lizards thrown at them and then just becoming entranced. I saw bead bags flying in the air when witches try to touch them. I saw witches flying in the air when they try to touch devotees. Yes, and then I saw shrunken heads. In South America, they actually have. It's like this tantric thing they have. Stores where you can buy shrunken heads, downtown witch stores. You can buy things to witch people. Nice, isn't it? So, of course, India, it all comes from India. Good things come from India, bad things come from India. Like Prabhupada said, the hippies, they learned to smoke marijuana because that comes from India. And Krishna consciousness came from India, too. So there's a lot of good and bad things. It's not that everything. Of course, it's Kali Yuga. Anyway, so another M is meat. That's one of the regular foods. You have to eat meat. And eat all sorts of meat. I mean, even human flesh. You have to eat your food out of a human skull. That's part of Tantra. Yeah. That's what parts of Kundalini Tantra. You do that. You actually have to get a skull. You know, imagine someone coming to prasadam here. Where's your bowl, Prabhu? Here, just pour it in there. I put some clay in the eye hole so the soup won't flow out. Did you see that? I've seen it. They just eat out of the skull. And, yeah, it's quite nice. So these are so these are the regulated principles of Tantra, one which is mentioned here, and of course anyone who practices this goes to hell and has to suffer basically in the same way according to whatever rituals they followed in Tantra. You know, here it's described about the semen, drinking the semen. Other places, they'd have to become a fish and be cooked up, or have to drink. It's actually mentioned later on, drinking liquor. If someone's attached to drinking liquor, then they're fed red-hot molten metal by the Yamadutas. So all these things, you know, they say the punishment fits the crime. So therefore, it's better not to follow this left-handed tantra. And actually, if you want to bring your wife under her control, under your control, I'll tell you how. Prabhupada said, give her saris. I probably said this. I mean, saris and earrings and jewelry and everything like that. And then she's happy. Not under your control so much, but, you know, happy. And nice food. I forgot about that one. That's Prabhupada. Prabhupada said it. And actually, if you really want to do the best thing for your wife, you give her Krishna. That's the important thing. That's the important thing. Other things are not essential. Anyway, so these are some of the points about this verse. I didn't want to get too much into the details, the scatological details about the verse itself. So any questions or comments? Yes.
When I was in Vrindavan, I know there was a Vaishnava contract there.
Yeah. That's fine. Yeah.
Rituals and something with a peacock feather, and they're just gone afterwards, or like jaundice or something.
Really?
Yeah.
That's nice. So you know, there's Vaishnava tantric. Tantric just means the connect one. Connect one, or rituals or procedures that one can perform to connect one. So you know, there are Vaishnava rules and regulations. There's Tantra for Kshatriyas to create weapons. You know, in the Atharva Veda, there are different tantras mentioned to create the Brahmastra weapon, or different weapons like that. So, yeah, if it's done to serve Vaishnavas, then it's bona fide. But it's not that we have to do everyone else's tantra. It's not that I have to learn that tantra in order to be a devotee, or I have to learn all the details of the intricate deity worship to be a pujari. In America, we should keep it simple, because we want people to be attracted to serve the deities. We want the community to serve the deities. And if we, I'm sorry, I forgot to talk about that. That was an important point. If we actually want people to be absorbed in deity worship in America, it's important to keep it simple. Because if we make it like someone has to have a PhD to go on the altar, I'll give you an example of myself, that for a while I was living in Los Angeles where deity worship is quite complicated. And so I never went on the altar because it was just like, it's too much for me. Whereas in other places, even before that, I was worshiping Radha and Krishna, I was bathing the deities and doing all these things. Because it was very simple. You go on, you chant Hare Krishna, you bathe the deities, you address the deities, you pray to Krishna. For me, that's the way I am. So we have to... For the Westerners, that's generally the way Westerners are. And most people in India, too. I mean, it's not that people in India are any more complex than Westerners. So if we keep it simple, it will attract people. You know, you can do it, you can act. Like Prabhupada even wanted Gornatai deities distributed in each and every Friday's home. And that's without any rituals. Prabhupada said you could call them happy dolls. That was Prabhupada's idea of deity worship before he died. You can put them on a shelf and you put little instructions with them, chant this mantra in front of these deities and your whole life will be successful. Or put some nice vegetarian foodstuffs in front of them and your whole life will be successful. So that's really keep it simple, sadhu. I mean, that's as simple as you can get. Yet, that's what Prabhupada prescribed in the Western world. So it's interesting. You know, as far as preaching, utility is the principle, Prabhupada said. In other words, adjust things so that people can accept the essence of Krishna consciousness. And those are our contours in the West. Yeah.
That's interesting what you said about the Gornatai deities, and I've heard that before. I actually bought some Gornatai deities that I was going to give to my mother, and then I was told that I shouldn't because, you know, it might be offensive. And so it's interesting to have that people will interpret Prabhupada and make things more complicated after the fact.
Yeah.
You know, and that seems to happen quite a bit.
Yeah, actually, after Prabhupada left, things became extremely complicated in ISKCON. I wonder if I'm in the same movement that I was in before. But Prabhupada said we can distribute them on Sankirtan, like books. people can put them on a shelf. I mean, Gaura Tai are very merciful. So we have these deities that I ordered from Hong Kong, these little happy dolls, you know, the plastic Gaura Tai, and we've been distributing them like that and sending them to other temples, and that was Prabhupada's desire. Because anyway, keep it simple for the Western preaching. No complex rituals or mudras. Okay, on that happy note. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.